Welcome back. You're listening to This Week on RTE Radio 1 with Justin McCarthy. In the coming weeks, government ministers will begin budget negotiations with the Department of Finance, and the issue of student fees will come back on the agenda. Earlier this week, at a private meeting with his party, reported on in the Irish Examiner, the Taoiseach Simon Harris outlined his budget priorities, which include reducing the cost of education. But Simon Harris's successor in the Department of Further and Higher Education has already indicated his opposition to universal fee cuts. The Minister for Further and Higher Education, James Lawless, is with us now in our studio to discuss this and other issues. Good afternoon and welcome to the programme.
Good afternoon, Justin. Good to be in with you.
In last year's budget, student fees were cut by €1,000. That reduction was paid for out of a cost of living package. We were told it was a one-off package, that cost of living package, and that there'll be no similar cost of living package in the forthcoming budget. So what is that going to mean for students next year?
Well, look, first of all, I just want to say some of the measures that are in place for students starting this September and indeed continuing education this September. So we have a number of additional grants in place. We have increased thresholds. For the first time ever, a household income up to €115,000 would receive at least some form of support. That's higher than it's ever been. We also have a number of different ranges of support. So you can get I looked at the SUSE system this morning. There's up to 54 permutations just looking at grants and fees. And if you include part-time fees and if you include postgrad, you're up to 70, 80 different permutations. So I suppose one thing I'd say is the system is complex, maybe too complex. And talking to students and students' unions and colleges and access offices over the last number of months, there's a desire to reform that, simplify it, and target monies to where they really need it. And that includes, of course, people in pockets of disadvantage, but also what we talk about, the squeeze middle. People that might have multiple children, maybe going to third level at the same time, people that are paying mortgages, paying childcare, paying additional, all sorts of different living costs. And how do we support those people? And how do we make sure that we can ensure that education is supported for everybody? Because it's really a building block of progress in this country.
All right. But the last year, everybody got a cut in their fees. Are you saying to us now today that in the coming year or after the next budget, that will not be happening? Everybody will not be getting a cut?
So I suppose in the previous year it was slightly different. The context was different because there was a cost of living package from the central government. And things like energy credits, you know, were universally applied, welfare benefits, there were bonuses at Christmas and other times of the year. And there was a general cost of living package across many different parts of government. Now, the indications are, we haven't entered budget discussions in earnest yet. We're engaged on the National Development Plan at the moment, which I'm seeking significant uplift for education and research in that as well. But the indications are that there won't be a cost of living package this year. So all of us in any walk of life have to play the hands we're dealt. If I don't have a cost of living package, I can't do those kind of measures that were done last year. So what it means is I'm looking at the year going into the budget, and whatever I do in the budget in October will then kick in the following September. So, we plan a year ahead in terms of budgeting. So some of the things that are already happening, though, I mentioned that.
No, sorry, can I just clarify? Because we are coming into the month of July now, and students and their families, they'll be planning, they'll be budgeting for the coming academic year. So can I just get a straight, clear answer to this question? Should some students be planning to see their fees increase next year?
So the once-off supports, and they were phrased and very clearly described as once-off at the time, are not being provided for as it stands because there's no cost of living package being made available. That may change coming into the budget. It's a matter for the finance ministers more so than myself. But, that is what's coming.
So, but in terms of what you have in your department and the resources you can provide, are you saying we cannot provide the resources to keep that €1,000 fee cut going next year? It'll have to be, for some students, they're going to see their fees go back up.
So they will revert. I suppose the starting point is that the fees are exactly as they were in the last several years, minus the once-off.
I just want a clear answer to that question.
As things stand, that is the case. Yes, as things stand.
So now, some students are going to have to pay more next year than they did for the past academic year?
Possibly, but actually the same as they would have paid 3 years earlier. So, fees will reset, as will energy costs, as will the welfare system, as will every other means test of payment across government, will revert to what it was before cost of living packages. If there's no cost of living package, there's no cost of living subsidy. If there's no cost of living subsidy, rates revert to what they were before. What do we do instead? So what we do is we do things like we expand the grant scheme. We make measures available to higher thresholds. We have people up to, in some cases, €136,000 income benefiting from fee supports, including a €500 contribution to the student contribution, in some cases a 50% contribution, in some cases a full contribution. And this is on top of paying the fees initiative overall. So there's significant monies, several hundreds of millions every year, going towards fee supports, going towards grant supports. And what I've done, I've sat down in Croke Park, I held a cost of education event, I brought the students' unions, I brought the access officers, I brought various advocacy groups, I brought representatives of parents and colleges, and said, what is it that you need to see tackled here? And there were 15 different items actually highlighted by the students themselves. Fees was one, but it was only one. There was accommodation, there was transport, there was grants, there was cost of materials, laptops, books, etc. So what I'm doing on the back of that is I've asked my department to put together a cost of education paper. It will set out the choices available depending on different resources, you know, depending on what resources are available in the budget and how we best allocate those.
Okay.
I will publish that this summer and the entire system will be able to examine that and we can have an informed debate as to what is the right way to go in this particular budget.
All right. But the Programme for Government makes a commitment that the government will continue to reduce the student contribution fee over the lifetime of the government. And what you're telling us here today is that for some students that won't actually be the case.
So that particular government commitment has three items in it. One is to continue to reduce the student contribution fee. Two is to reduce the financial burden on families and students. And three, to do both of the above in a financially sustainable way. I can't cherry pick the programme for government. I have to implement it in full. I absolutely intend to do that over the lifetime of the government. So is it financially sustainable in a circumstance where we don't have any cost of living package to put resources into one-off measures? I think the clue is in the name. There were one-off measures. However, I absolutely intend to wind down the student contribution fee over the lifetime of the government, as is committed okay. to. And I think also we need to look at people that perhaps are in greater need than others. If people have multiple children in college at one time, if people are looking at particular courses, if there's particular circumstances around them, as well as, of course, all the traditional means-tested approaches. So absolutely, I will do this. But it is complicated. I said there's 54 different permutations as it is.
But some students are going to feel the pinch next year, as you've just said. And when Simon Harris tells his party, albeit at a private meeting, which was reported on by the Irish Examiner, that his priority is to see a reduction in the cost of education. I mean, do you see that as interfering in your department? Because he will be the minister who will have cut fees and you will be the minister who will have increased fees for some students.
Well, I hope to have a full term of office. I'm privileged to serve every day. I serve as a privilege. And I intend to radically overhaul the cost of education over the term that I'm privileged to serve.
Okay.
So there are many, many aspects. Student accommodation, we're pledging, we have 116 beds opening a minute this September. I expect UCD and DCU boards to produce another 800, 900 between them in the coming weeks. Those decisions are being taken at the moment. We have transport costs and the student leave card.
Okay, but on student accommodation then, we know under your government plans that of reform of rent pressure zones, that landlords who rent properties to students outside of student campuses, private landlords in other words, that they will be allowed to increase rents when a property becomes vacant, perhaps at the end of the college term. That's going to put students at a huge disadvantage, isn't it? That they're probably going to have to pay more for their rent every year.
Yeah, so myself and Minister Brown are sitting down. We've engaged on a number of occasions. We're sitting down again, I think, this week. And we're looking at how do we carve out student-specific accommodation from the RPZ rules. Now, there's a balance here in student accommodation in the same way as there is in private accommodation that we want to incentivise development of it. I have already short-circuited a rapid delivery programme in the three colleges I mentioned, UCD, DCU and Maynooth, which I hope will come good later this year. But we have a number of projects around the country, but also the private sector can play its part. If private sector developers can come in, build student accommodation at scale in the campus facilities, that's something we want to encourage. In the same way as Minister Brown wants to encourage that for private sector. So we have to get the balance right. There is a particular set of circumstances for students because they tend to obviously have a turnover every 9 months as opposed to even 12 months. That's why we recognise with the 41-week lease, for example, earlier this year, rather than a 52-week lease, as might be the norm. So those kind of measures, we're looking at those in the detail.
But do you envisage a situation where student properties would be exempt from the rules that the government have introduced, that so that they would not have to subject themselves to a rent review every year.
Absolutely. I mean, that's part of it. And, you know, that was in the memo that Minister Mair brought to government. That is part of the plan, that we will have a particular subset of rules around student-specific accommodation.
I'm not talking about student accommodation on campuses now, but private accommodation rented to students.
Sure.
Will that fall into that category?
So it's difficult to quantify it, because if you have a house, say, with four co-tenants, and three of them are working, one is doing a postgrad, is that student accommodation? If you have a house that in 3 years has been private sector workers and students are taking it for this year, but it's workers again the next year, is that student specific? So I think that we have to work out a formula. Is it that the accommodation is always and only rented to students? Does that mean it matches minimum standards? For example, must they provide desks and other supporting facilities? You know, how is it actually quantified? So that's part of the discussion I'm having with Minister Brown.
But it sounds like you're a long way from resolving that issue, though.
Well, I think it's relatively straightforward to work out the set of rules for student-specific accommodation, where we have apartments on campus or in around campus provided for the student population. I think that's relatively straightforward. We just need to work out the balance in terms of incentivizing its delivery while at the same time protecting students from rapid turnover. I think we can do that. I think there's a couple of ideas in the system already. But just on student accommodation, I brought to Cabinet just last week a standardized design memo, which sets out the way in which we can build student accommodation at scale. It borrows from the likes of Oxbridge, from MIT and American universities, as well as more modern universities across Europe. And it says things like, how do we achieve maximum efficiency? How do we get the maximum number of rooms per square metre? How do we do this in a way that is comfortable, convenient for students, that are shared spaces? And how do we do it without everybody reinventing the wheel every time? So this will now become the standard memo. We won't have to start again with the new architect and new procurement mechanism every time. This can be rolled out at scale in the same way as we already do schools and everything else.
But what I'm asking you about is private landlords who rent their rooms or rent their houses to students. Is it likely that those students will be subject to the rent pressure zone regulations, which means that they'll have to undergo a rent review every year when they come back into the house?
So we're looking at ways to designate student-specific accommodation. And part of that question is whether a private rent, so the, you know, a property, three-bed semi-D in an estate, does that qualify student-specific accommodation?
But you have no solution to that right now.
Well, we're meeting on that just this week ahead, and we're meeting that over the next couple of weeks.
All right.
It's not easy. The one thing I'd say as well, none of this kicks in until the September of the following year for students. No change at all this September for students. The RPZs come in March 2026, so we've six
some
months or more to work this through.
All right. Can I ask you about the presidency? Two former Fianna Fáil ministers' names have been mentioned this weekend. You heard Minister Mary Hanafin on with Brendan O'Connor earlier this morning, saying she is a former minister, Mary Hanafin, saying she is interested in the job. And Peter Power of UNICEF, his name also mentioned in the Sunday newspapers this weekend. Is Fianna Fáil going to run a candidate?
So those discussions are ongoing. I'm a member of the National Executive, as well as being on the Parliamentary Party. And I know there's a range of views, I suppose, around the table. I think the presidency is a slightly unique institution from a political sense, in the sense that usually when you attain a high office, you bring to bear the policies and values of the party that elected you. The presidency, you actually leave your flag behind when you go in the door, and then you represent the entire nation and you're above politics. So in a way, and I think in recent years and recent elections, we've seen that really come through more so. So it's not as much about a party political campaign as it might have been in bygone days. It's really more now about finding an individual that can represent the values of the nation.
Are you in favour of Fianna Fáil running a candidate in the election?
I'm in favour of Fianna Fáil competing every election where there is an opportunity to put our policies to work. And I think that we will have a preferred candidate in this election. Whether that's somebody of the party or whether it's an external candidate who shares the values of the party remains to be decided.
All right. And do you have a preferred candidate out of the names that are in the public domain at the moment, Mary Hanafin and Peter Power?
Well, you've mentioned two. Coming in this morning, I heard six.
Right.
There might be 12. You know, it's probably... look, I think it will crystallise shortly.
When will you make a decision?
Well, I think over the summer. I mean, the race isn't underway for. I mean, and let's respect President Higgins. You know, he's still some time to serve, and I think he's been outstanding
so
individual.
But there'll be a candidate at the ploughing, will there?
I don't know what the ploughing. What is that? September? I'd expect by autumn. Certainly, we'll have to. You know, if there's going to be a race, the race will be on at that stage. I'd expect for sure.
All right, Minister for Further and Higher Education, James Lawless. Thank you very much for coming in to speak with us today. We'll debate the future for the GPO after this break.